listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to everyone. Everyone's welcome here, no matter what heritage, belief system, gender, sexuality, age. You're all welcome here. And we also acknowledge that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders, past and present. And we'll just share a few notices. There are a few special dates coming up. Immediately this week, no moving meditation, because that's normally on Monday and it's a holiday. No terrace singers in the month of April. There is bush care. Ask for Jenny Warner. She can tell you about that if you're interested. Also, a special notice to welcome Bill and Linda. We'll all make them feel very welcome visiting from the US for a few days in Adelaide. So very, very welcome to you. Now, dates coming up. We've organised, through that brainstorming of things that young people wanted in particular, a couple of events that the Vision Committee has been working on. One is an excursion to Warraparinga, the Kaurna campsite, which now has a modern building and they run tours there and so on. So that's planned for Friday the 21st, which is in the school holidays, but could I have a show of hands of how many of people present here might be interested? So we have a good number. That's great. Can I please ask you to email or telephone Mary at the office to confirm that you'd like to come along? So it's going to be 10:30 a.m. Some carpooling will be available from here. So one of the questions is whether you are willing to take others or whether you would like to just drive here and be a passenger in someone else's car. Otherwise, for people that live further south, they might want to go directly there, and instructions will be provided in due course. So Warraparinga, it's on the other side of South Road from Flinders University. Also, coming up, we're planning to corral some young people to prepare a community dinner on Friday the 5th of May. And we're after an indication of numbers. So again, show of hands of who might like to attend such a dinner. Thank you. That just helps us in planning. I also just wanted to note that we're about halfway through Ramadan, the annual Muslim fasting event and special time for them. And I went to one of their wonderful feasts in the evening last night because their fasting is during the day, but they are allowed to eat after sunset according to their law. And unfortunately, I was fasting at the time, so I enjoyed looking at all of the sweets, but I didn't actually partake. And I also note that it's halfway through Pesach, or the Passover festival, which for the Jewish people is celebrating the saving of their nation as they made an exodus from Egypt in ancient times. I do note that contributions can be made in the foyer after the service, either by tap and pay or a cash offering. And now some music from Brendan. Thank you. Thank you. We gather around this candle, this flame, as a caring community. And this flame can represent many things. It can be the spirit of life, which inspires us, motivates us, and is always available for guidance. And now I'd like to invite Mary up to tell us the story of the phoenix.
The story of the phoenix is very ancient, and its origin and evolution over time is itself a fascinating story for another time, perhaps.
Thank you, Mary. It fits our theme of renewal today. And now our time for candles of joy and concerns. And if you will, let's contemplate what we've heard, and you may wish to pray with me. We are thankful for the joys in our lives. Joys from art and culture, which moves us, inspires us, spurs us on. Joy for the friendships in our lives. The simple pleasures of getting together, sharing, and caring for each other. Joy for the messages of affirmation that we receive, that we are worthwhile and beautiful human beings. Let us be grateful. And now you have something very special placed on the seats where you're sitting. I don't mean the Easter eggs. I mean hymn sheets. So let us sing the hymn now. How could anyone ever tell you? You. And now Aran will come up with a reading from a short work by Leo Tolstoy.
It's just because people believe others and do not believe in themselves that there are different faiths. I also believed others and lost myself as in a swamp. Lost myself so that I had no hope of finding my way out. Every faith praises itself only, and so they all creep about like blind puppies. There are many faiths, but the Spirit is one, in me and in you and in others. So that if everyone believes in themselves, all will be united. Everyone be themselves, and all will be as one.
Thank you. So, I'm reflecting today on the theme of renewal, in a roundabout way. I was going to give the title Revival, but I thought that might put people off. You know? Disaster is not always what it seems. Out of tragic circumstances and terribly sad events, we can draw hope and a deeper meaning to life. Leading up to Easter, I was contemplating the principle of sacrifice in human experience, particularly the lives of those courageous individuals who faced torture and death for the sake of their faith. And this is not just a phenomenon of the past. Even today, there are Muslims in India, followers of the Baha'i faith in Iran, and Christians in parts of the world who face persecution because they hold to their faith. I read up about a couple of individuals in particular. Michael Servetus was marked as a heretic by the Catholic Church in the 1500s, and burned at the stake. His book, Errors of the Trinity, gives you a clue about why he was hunted down and burned upon a pile of his books. The other person I've been reading about this past week is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a brilliant German Protestant theologian who had the misfortune, or perhaps one could say opportunity, to be ordained into Christian ministry just before the Nazis came to power in 1933. Just 2 days after Hitler came to power, Bonhoeffer was speaking in a radio broadcast about the dangers of idolizing any human leader, making out the case that Christ was the leader, not the political leader who became known as the Führer. The radio broadcast was cut off before he finished. He fought unsuccessfully against the Nazification of his church organization. He worked underground in Germany, training Protestant pastors outside of the Nazi-dominated official church. He worked with members of the German resistance against Hitler. Perhaps the greatest demonstration of his courage, was that he traveled to the US just months before World War II, and although he would have been welcome to stay there, he chose to return to Germany. He dedicated himself to sharing the trials and suffering of the German people in the war which was expected, in order that he might serve with them with self-respect after the war had finished. In fact, his freedom and his life were increasingly in danger after World War II began. He was arrested in 1943, and after 2 years in concentration camps, he was hanged only a month before the war finished. But it's not these sad events that I want to focus on today. Both of these men I've just mentioned left great legacies. The writings of Servetus, despite being officially heretical, spread through Europe, and they formed part of the inspiration for the Unitarians who established themselves in Transylvania and then in Poland. And from Eastern Europe, Unitarian thinking spread to England, from which this very group of Unitarians can trace its heritage. Part of Bonhoeffer's work in Germany leading up to World War II was the development of ecumenical networks. He was one of three European youth delegates to the International Conference of the World Alliance for International Friendship Through the Churches, which clearly needed a shorter name, and it grew into the World Council of Churches, which since 1948 has been a liberal, progressive Christian voice in the world, speaking out against injustice. The point is that these men of courage and faith left a legacy which has endured for decades or even centuries. Now, whatever you may think of the way Christianity has turned out, probably the most well-known martyr in human history has been Yeshua. His life and death left us with an astonishing legacy, although how much of it he would recognize today, I don't know. The religious edifice built over his mortal life is architecturally symbolized in the several large churches built up on the alleged site of his crucifixion in Jerusalem. In the 2,000 years or so after the crucifixion of this passionate and charismatic Jewish preacher, what great good and what great evil has been done in his name? Today I reflect on the courage of the man and his willingness to face death for his beliefs. It is Easter Sunday, so I hope you won't mind today entertaining conjecture about the life of this man. With a historian's lens, there are several considerations. One prefers earlier accounts rather than later accounts. The book attributed to Mark is acknowledged as the earliest biographical account of Yeshua, so from that point of view is to be preferred to later accounts. Caution must be used with the term biographical, however, because the concept of history was very different in those days. People used to write stories of wars, events, or individuals as advocacy for a point of view, not with the intention of sifting evidence to establish an objective record, although some might say that applies to every history ever written. One prefers independent, that is, non-adherent accounts. But as you know, these are sparse in relation to Yeshua. Corroborated accounts are of more value than single sources, but of course, corroborative value has to be heavily discounted if a source derived from an earlier source. And for example, the extent to which Matthew and Luke drew on Mark. One must also consider the evidence, which is now fairly abundant, of Jewish life, custom, and practice under Roman rule at the time. And one more factor to consider when Christian scriptures to be considered is the principle of admissions against self-interest. There are examples of sayings of Yeshua in Mark, for example, which later authors have chosen to exclude because they didn't fit the later developing narrative and theology about the man upon whom Christianity was founded. I think we can assume that Yeshua was born into a traditional Jewish family, unexceptional in their practice at the time. The traditional and commonplace names of his siblings suggest that. And we probably would have heard about it if he was from some out of the ordinary extreme group. It's quite likely that the young Yeshua was exposed to apocalyptic Jewish thought. You see, for centuries, foreign powers had been occupying most of the Jewish population. The Jewish prophets of old, Isaiah and so on, whose warnings sounded out in Jewish scripture, had explained military defeat with reference to slipping standards of behaviour and religious observance. Many must have wondered, however, what had to be done to get back into the good books of their God after centuries of subjugation by foreigners. A school of thought had developed which provided an answer to this existential problem. Reflecting the good versus evil narrative of the Babylonian religion, the world was seen as the forces of God versus the forces of evil. Someone would come to tip the balance in favour of the Jewish people once again, a Messiah, a great leader who would bring a religious and national revival. Looking at the sayings of Yeshua reported in the book attributed to Mark, it doesn't sound as if he considered himself to be the Messiah until late in his brief ministry. In light of his criticism of the Jewish religious leadership built up around the temple in Jerusalem, Yeshua surely expected serious trouble after his triumphal entry into Jerusalem at the time of Pesach, the Passover festival, followed by upsetting the furniture of the great temple and then starting to preach there. The fact that he entered Jerusalem around the time of Pesach is significant. This was the festival which celebrated the deliverance of the Jewish nation from Egypt in ancient times. Yeshua knew that the day after he and his disciples shared the evening meal in Jerusalem, the animal sacrifices would take place. And Josephus, the Roman historian, estimated that 250,000 lambs would be sacrificed in Jerusalem that day. Only a small fraction were to be sacrificed at the Great Temple, so just about every Jewish household must have been planning to slaughter a lamb that day. Before I go on, let's hear some more music. Thank you. Beautiful, thank you. Now I realize that as I paint this picture of Yeshua, the man, it may not fit everyone's conceptions about who and what he was, but all I can do is study Mark and the early sources and give you the best picture I can. There are many examples in the gospel stories illustrating that Yeshua well and truly came to fulfill the law in terms of his own sense of mission, not to bring in a new scheme or a new law. We're all familiar with the stories of faith healing and demonstrations of a caring attitude. And faith healing wasn't a novelty at the time. The teaching of love for others, within the Jewish community at least, was entirely consistent with Jewish teaching. Apart from the healing and caring aspects of his ministry, Yeshua on many occasions supported strict observance of the Jewish law. In fact, he was encouraging his listeners not only to follow the law, but the spirit of the law. For example, it wasn't enough to steer clear of adultery, but the point of the law was to resist feelings of lust entirely. Apart from his criticism of excessive legalism and hypocrisy, Yeshua's disdain for material wealth wouldn't have endeared him to the authorities. He provoked a sense of urgency amongst his followers with the teaching that the apocalyptic change was imminent, and only those who had reformed their lives in accordance with the law would survive. Against the background of these factors, what probably sealed his death warrant was his popularity amidst claims that he was the leader required to bring about the transformation of Israel. The author of Mark reports that Yeshua experienced dread and sadness before he initiated the final chapter of his life. In other words, he knew the danger he was facing by entering Jerusalem during the biggest festival of the religious calendar and drawing attention to himself. Whatever our religion or philosophy, surely we can admire the courage of the man who placed himself at risk and stood up to his accusers, knowing the likelihood of crucifixion if he was seen as troubled by the Romans. He certainly left a legacy, although it may not have been the legacy he imagined. I'm not reflecting today on the church, which grew up outside the Jewish faith once Paul had split with the Jesus movement in Jerusalem and gone to Rome. That's another story. But one doesn't need to be a Christian to appreciate the example that Yeshua left to us. A person of faith who had the courage of his convictions. Someone who would not tolerate a breach in the standards of propriety and caring for others, which must be the foundations of society. Somebody who would engage with the rich, the poor, the healthy, the sick, the young, and the old. Easter brings a focus on these qualities. Now the question is how we demonstrate these qualities in our everyday life. And one of the delightful things about this community is the willingness to care for others. Sometimes it takes courage to step out of your comfort zone to care for others, whether it be people in this group or family or strangers that we meet. Do we say the kind words that need to be spoken, even if it might become embarrassing? Do we sound the note of caution when we see someone going astray, even though they might resent us for it? Easter Sunday is traditionally a time to celebrate life, and it's no coincidence that Easter comes shortly after the spring equinox in the Northern Hemisphere, the time when we see nature regenerate. we can take this moment to celebrate the Spirit in us, to celebrate the possibility that we can always turn around relationships for the better. In other words, at the time of the Christian story of revival, can we, by contemplation and discipline, induce our own spiritual revival? Renewal is symbolized in the Christian story. Renewal is also symbolized in the little fertility symbols that we exchange with each other at this time of the year, the chocolate eggs and other things. The renewal you may wish to focus on, though, is a renewed commitment to look for opportunities to care for people, to look for opportunities to serve others, and to renew your commitment to be courageous in saying what needs to be said at the right time. This is a chance to renew yourself, no matter what your age or condition. It's an opportunity to renew your commitment to love. And now our final piece of music for the day. We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitariansa.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitariansa.org.au. Thank you. Thanks, Brendan. That was brilliant.